Hi, I'm Neil Stavem. I want to thank you for listening to this podcast from Connecting Faith. There are many more podcasts available at our website, myfaithradio.com. And your support makes this possible.
Real conversations about how we live out our faith every day. Welcome to Connecting Faith.
You know, the verse out of James 1, 19 and 20 says, "Everyone should be quick to listen, slow to speak, and slow to become angry. For man's anger does not bring about the righteous life that God desires." You know, it's Memory Verse Monday, and that's our verse for this week. And it seems appropriate that we talk about anger in light of our conversation today, because there are our society is filled with the outcomes of uncontrolled anger. In fact, today we're going to hear some stories about one of the nation's largest prisons, housing thousands of men with life sentences without parole, and the impact of the gospel in this facility. It's a powerful story, and it's just ahead. We'll also hear, though, a little bit later this hour from Andy Stanley, who's been doing each Monday, giving us some insight on Bible verses. And Andy says, you know, it's at the heart of almost every problem, marriage or otherwise. So we'll get some insight on anger a little bit later today. And not that, you know, want to talk about any anger issues in your marriage, but if you want to share, no.
Yeah, right. Anyone no. Looking at me? No.
No.
We just moved, and you know, tempers can get short when the situations are high and stress is high. Doesn't have to be that situation, but you know, things happen in life where you just suddenly tense all the time, and you can say something and just go, "Why did I say that?" You know,
there's an opportunity if you need to just be challenged in your faith. Tomorrow night, a special one night event. All across the nation, there are some amazing stories of Jesus at work in some of the darkest places on earth. It's called The Insanity of God. It's the personal and lifelong journey of an ordinary couple from rural Kentucky who thought they were going on just your ordinary mission pilgrimage. And after spending over six hard years doing relief work in Somalia and experiencing life where it looked like God had turned away completely, the couple had a crisis of faith and left Africa asking, "Will you follow God even when it doesn't make sense?" And so they ended up going into areas where the church faces a great deal of persecution, asking the question, "Is Jesus worth it?" And out of that came the book, The Insanity of God, which has now become a movie documentary, and it is playing around the country tomorrow, kind of a one-night launch. And I saw a preview of it last February, and it's phenomenal.
I love that title.
Yeah.
It's compelling. You can bring an unbelieving friend and maybe change their course of destiny forever.
Your faith will be challenged by hearing stories of these men and women who are in many cases prisons around the globe because someone in authority was angry at the cross.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to talk prison ministry. But if you go to Google online, The Insanity of God, and you can find your maybe a theater near you where it's showing. So check that out. Well, mentioning it, talking a little bit about anger, you know, many wives are angry with their husbands because of a pornography addiction. And it may be that pornography addiction started as a result of a man's unresolved anger. And John Stonestreet is going to talk about a new study today on the point.
Another study confirms what everyone knows. For the Colson Center for Christian Worldview, I'm John Stonestreet with The Point. Any married person, especially women, can tell you how damaging pornography is. Now we have numbers to back it up. According to a University of Oklahoma study which interviewed thousands of married adults over several years, porn use by one or both partners is associated with a 100% increase in divorce. The correlation is almost certainly causal. The increased likelihood of divorce was much more pronounced among couples who said that they were happy together than among those who already said they were unhappy. In other words, porn use isn't just a symptom of marriages falling apart, but often the reason they fall apart. We didn't really need a study for this. Christians have long included lust among the deadliest sins, and now science is catching up. But as the world realizes porn isn't harmless fun, now's not the time to say no duh. It's time to offer the grace and mercy of the cross and demonstrate why God's design for sex is not only right, but good. With today's point, I'm John Stonestreet.
Well, it's 8 minutes after the hour, and looking forward to a conversation today with a return guest. We've always enjoyed talking with Byron Johnson, who's a distinguished professor of the social sciences at Baylor University. He's the founder and director of the Institute for Studies on Religion. And he has also directed the program on pro-social behavior at Baylor, a senior fellow at the Witherspoon Institute, a senior research scholar at the Institute for Jewish and Community Research, and a chief advisor for the Center of the Study of Religion and Chinese Society at Peking University, among other things. There's a long list of his credentials. He was also the Big Brother of the Year, the Lone Star Big Brother in 2013 for Big Brothers and Big Sisters of Texas. And he is, we've talked to him in the past about his book, More God, Less Crime. And he has just been part of a new work that's just completed called the Angola Prison Seminary, Effects of Faith-Based Ministry on Identity Transformation, Desistance, and Rehabilitation. And we're looking forward to jumping in to talk about what's going on in our culture today, and particularly in a large prison in Louisiana. Byron, welcome back to Connecting Faith, first of all.
Hey, it's good to be back on your show.
You know, what you've been studying are ministries and faith-based programs that are helping inmates survive prison. I was just reading in the latest book, and I thought that phrase was kind of sobering. The fact that we use the word survive, it seems like that's kind of an indictment on the criminal justice system as it stands now.
Well, you know, you were saying a minute ago about this couple that found out what it's like to serve in dark places. And prisons are not – I know we sometimes refer to them as country clubs because sometimes they actually have air conditioning. But they are difficult places, to say the least. And Angola is one of the most dark places that you can possibly imagine. It's for many decades, it had the reputation as the bloodiest prison in America. Rampant corruption among not just the inmates, but among the staff, members of the staff. So this was a very, very dark place. And about 22 years ago, a warden went there, realizing I'm inheriting a very difficult job. How do I survive, let alone the inmates survive? He decided that he would start a Bible college in the prison, thinking that that may be helpful. And so that was about 22 years ago. And over the last 4 years, we've been in that prison with a five-member research team, studying the prison, interviewing everybody that we could possibly can. It's the largest study ever conducted in prisons dealing with the topic of religion. And it's really become a fascinating project. In the short time that we have today, I hope to maybe answer some of your questions that will give your listeners just a glimpse of how something pretty miraculous can take place, and positive at that, in such a dark place.
Well, maybe just to back up a moment, Byron, just say a bit about you've been directing the Institute for Studies of Religion at Baylor for some time, and this whole area of crime, I guess, does it go even deeper than that about pro-social behavior? Is that why you got interested?
Yeah, and you know, your listeners may be wondering about that term pro-social behavior, but the reality is our news is dominated by oftentimes antisocial behavior, the kinds of behavior that get people in prison. But we're interested in studying just the opposite of that. What is pro-social behavior? This is, you know, people that serve other people, people who volunteer, people who give of their time, talents, and treasures. These are all good things. Why is it that most people obey the law? And what are the motivations behind doing the right thing, making the right choices? We want to understand what makes people do those things, not just why do people do bad things. Most research kind of focuses on that, but we want to focus on the other side. We think we understand why people do bad things, but we would like to know why it is that people would do something that strikes you as odd. Why would people give away their money? And why do people help those in need, even though that work is so very, very difficult? And so those are that when we say pro-social behavior, that's the other side of the ledger that we also don't want to neglect.
Byron, that we're going to jump in and tell the story of the Angola Prison Seminary, because even just hearing those words, prison seminary, that doesn't sound quite right. And in fact, it is pretty unique. But give us a little sense of you know, Angola. It's Louisiana Penitentiary. It is one of the largest in the nation. Lots of life without parole, right?
Yeah, it's a remarkable place. It's founded on the grounds of an old plantation where slaves were brought from Angola, Africa. And so, you know, there's so many things here that just strike you as you go to the prison and you show up and you see that it's all these different camps over a great area of space in kind of a swampy area of Louisiana. And it's the largest maximum security prison in America, and you know, it basically is unusual in that so many of the inmates are serving life sentences. About 90% of these inmates will die in the prison, because in Louisiana, when you get a life sentence, it literally means a life sentence. There is no parole, and one of the things that people say is, you know, I don't know if I believe in jailhouse religion. I think that's kind of maybe a fake way to get an early release. And there is some truth to that, that you could imagine people would do anything to get out of prison early. But when you're serving life, you're serving life. And so there is really no incentive for good behavior at a place like Angola if you're going to die in prison. And that's what makes this story, among other things, so very powerful, is that for many years people lived, you know, like they weren't getting out. What do they have to lose? So that's why there was so much violence there, and that's why so many people were killed at the prison, and then why there was corruption, and it was just such a dark place to be. But, you know, over the years, even predating this seminary, which, like you said, sounds so odd, you know, maximum security prison with a Bible college embedded within it. But they also did something interesting in Angola. They allowed inmate-led churches, and they've been there for many decades, but they were weak. When they started the Bible college, it really seemed to put wind in the sails of these inmate-led congregations. And so there are 29 churches at the prison, Angola. So it's Louisiana State Penitentiary, also goes by the name of Angola. And so if you can imagine churches in a prison where inmates are the pastoral staff, and they have elders, deacons within these congregations, and there are ministries, and they meet all the time, it's a pretty unusual situation. And what we've tried to do is to, you know, go and attend, observe, take notes, interview people, and then analyze any and all data that we can get our hands on to see what kind of an effect these congregations and the Bible College have had over the last 20-some-odd years.
It's an amazing story. We're going to get into it in the moments ahead as we unpack the Angola Prison Seminary, and we'll talk the effects of faith-based ministry on identity transformation, desistance, and rehabilitation. That's the title of a new work summarizing these years of study. Byron Johnson, distinguished professor of the social sciences at Baylor University and founder and director of the Institute for Studies on Religion. He's author of the book More God, Less Crime. He's my guest today, and we're going to continue on our conversation in a moment. Invite you to stay tuned for this amazing story, and hopefully out of that, learn some lessons about what we can do in sharing and working in these dark places. Stay tuned to Connecting Faith.
God doesn't intend for husbands and wives to navigate the great mystery of marriage without Him. Dennis and Barbara Rainey's Family Life Bible points us in the right direction. It's a resource helping you experience new richness in your marriage, with articles and insight on resolving conflict, communicating effectively, and much, much more. We are giving away one Family Life Marriage Bible every week this month. MyFaithRadio.com has your chance to win today.
They sang for you. You make all things new. You make all things new.
talking today with Byron Johnson, founder and director of the Institute for Studies of Religion, and he's a distinguished professor of the social sciences at Baylor University's. He is also a director of the Program on Pro-Social Behavior, and that we are talking today about an amazing story of God at work in one of the largest maximum security prisons in the nation, the Angola Prisons, Louisiana State Penitentiary. And Byron's just released a book, along with several other co-authors, talking about the Angola Prison Seminary. And you just kind of set the scene for us. Does the size of Angola, I mean, create some challenges? And I mean, just say a little bit more about, you know, how to even get a, you know, yeah. It's one thing to offer some Bible classes, but then suddenly to get a seminary. Well, the New Orleans Baptist Seminary made this kind of one of their branch seminaries, right?
Yeah, it's so remarkable. I mean, I hope your listeners will appreciate this when they understand that most maximum security prisons are not big because they provide so much security. So you might have a minimum security prison or a medium security prison that, you know, has 3,000 inmates, something like that. But the maximum security prisons tend to be smaller, so they can provide much more supervision. So now you have this prison with over 6,000 prisoners. And about, I don't know, about 3 years ago, they were around 5,000, but they closed a prison and sent about 1,100 prisoners, which is the size of some prisons themselves, about 1,100 or thereabouts, which is not a small prison, and sent those inmates en masse to Angola. So if I were the warden and I'm thinking, okay, we're getting inmates transferred in, not just 50, 75, but over 1,000, you know, I would think, okay, get ready because there may be riots. Without any event whatsoever, there were no problems bringing in that many people. So, you know, that was another indication that this place has become something quite different than what it used to be as a result of so much faith-based ministry taking place there. And, you know, one of the things that is also important for listeners to hear is that there's been what we would call kind of cultural change in this place that was once known for violence and corruption. It's not that it's a perfect prison, but now you have inmates that lead something called a hospice ministry. It's just a whole wing where you have elderly inmates that are dying of various kinds of illnesses because, as we said earlier, they don't get out. So there are like maybe three prisoners per month that actually die at Angola. And so, and guess who does the funerals? The inmate ministers that are trained at the Bible College. They do these funerals. They do grief counseling. And then they have the hospice ministry and many, many other kinds of ministries taking place within the prison itself. And a number of the professors at the New Orleans Baptist Theological Seminary that provide the education have said, you know, these guys provide us a model of what the church really should look like outside the prison. And the other thing that's really interesting is they have these 29 different congregations in the prison, and they, you know, they're from different denominational perspectives all over the place, you know, Methodist, Lutheran, Baptist, Pentecostal, Catholic, and it's the most ecumenical environment you can imagine because so many of these people, and they share different chapels. So, you know, you may worship at a Presbyterian church on Monday night, but then on Tuesday night you're worshiping at a Methodist church. Now, not everybody does that, but plenty of these inmates actually go to different churches and support those other churches. And I thought, well, that's kind of interesting. I don't know how many people attend multiple churches and get along well with each other as they do here. So it's an incredible, thriving kind of religious economy in the prison where people are free to be religious. And then what is really incredible is as these guys get training both in the congregations and in the Bible College, then they are free to serve other people. And that's the thing that we try to capture in the work is that these guys literally give their lives away. And if you could sum up everything about this project, what we've learned in one of the titles of a paper we wrote, Serving Life by Dying to Self. I mean, they're basically just giving their lives to others. These guys actually tithe in the prison. They tithe to other inmates that are indigent. And you may think that may be a real head scratcher because all of these guys are indigent. But, you know, sometimes they'll tithe just even things like toothpaste to another inmate that doesn't have one. Have a toothbrush or toothpaste. I mean, it's just remarkable the kind of change that we've been able to document. And then, as you might expect, people hear about these things, and so they're coming from all over the country to see what's happening here. Can we take and implement anything from Angola and use this in other prisons around the country? And that's another thing that I'll share with your listeners here in just a moment.
Well, we'll talk more about that just ahead. I'm just curious to know, because you said that inmate-led and they're free to be religious. It just seems like that. How does that work with maybe security issues? Obviously, a max security prison. So how are things inmate-led? We've got a couple minutes before our break. Say a bit about that.
Well, you know, in most prisons, you have people from the outside that come in and they do ministry. They'll preach. They'll lead Bible studies. This is very, very common. If you go to any prison in America, you'll see that. But in Angola, the inmates lead the Bible studies. The inmates preach the sermons. They have guests come in, but the guests come there to listen. I remember the warden telling me, you know, you won't hear anybody preach any better than an inmate that's, you know, really trained and knows how to preach. And there's something about a way in which an inmate can minister to another inmate that maybe a free world person like you or I couldn't.
Amazing story. One of the largest prisons in the, I guess it is the largest maximum security prison, and many of those in there are a life sentence without parole. So what's their motivation for actually changing for the better? That's something that you've been studying for some time. I want to hear maybe a bit about how New Orleans Baptist decided that, yeah, we could set up a seminary in a prison. I mean, did that fit with their mission? You know, how is it going to get paid for, all those things? We're going to hear more about, you know, maybe how others could take some lessons from this. We'll do that all coming up in a moment. We do need to take a little break, and so we'll return in a moment with Byron Johnson, who is founder and director of the Institute for Studies of Religion and a distinguished professor of social sciences at Baylor University. He has been working as a leading authority on scientific study of religion and faith-based organizations dealing with domestic violence and criminal justice. And he's written a wonderful book called More God, Less Crime. And he's part of a new book that's just come out, The Angola Prison Seminary. We're going to hear more about it in a moment. If you have a question or comment, you can certainly send one to us online at myfaithradio.com and click on the Connecting Faith show page for the email link there, or you can call us at 877-93-FAITH. That's 877-933-2484, and we'll talk more with Byron Johnson in just a moment. Talking about life change taking place at the largest maximum security prison in the nation, Louisiana State Penitentiary, better known as Angola. And out of there, there are some 29 churches, inmate-led churches, and the seminary trains graduates from New Orleans Baptist Theological Seminary, training bivocational pastors to serve throughout the prison. This is spreading around the country. We're hearing an update on it today from Byron Johnson, distinguished professor of social sciences at Baylor University and founder and director of Institute for the Studies of Religion. He's written the book More God, Less Crime. And Byron, this is the moving across the country, as I understand, right? This what's happening in Angola, because it's so amazing that others are saying, we want to be a part of this.
Well, you know, Neil, what's happened, so many states are just strapped for funding, and they've also had to cut. And so when you cut programs, In any prison will want to have as many programs as they can. They want to keep the inmates busy. They hope that they can help inmates get rehabilitated, but this all requires funding. And when states become in these tight places, how do you cut? And so a lot of states are saying we need programs, and then you have faith-based efforts like this one, where this is all privately funded. The Angola thing doesn't cost Louisiana a penny, and so what's happened in Texas, for example, is at the Darrington unit, which is a prison south of Houston, about 20 minutes south of Houston, modeled after Angola. There's a foundation called the Heart of Texas Foundation, led by Grove Norwood. They raised funds to help support the launching of a Bible college at the Darrington unit, and we're now studying that. And now it's a four-year program as well, and it's Southwestern Seminary in Fort Worth, Texas, that provides the education. And these inmates that have graduated are now being transferred as what they call field ministers to other prisons across the state of Texas. And we're now tracking these people over time to see what kind of effect they're having in the prisons where they're now ministering to inmates. So they're sending them out in groups across the state of Texas, and the goal is eventually to have field ministers from the Darrington prison at every prison in the state of Texas, and there are over 100 prisons in Texas. So other states, of course, are hearing about Darrington. Obviously, they'd already heard about Angola. And so now in West Virginia, in Michigan, in Florida, in Georgia, in Mississippi, New Mexico, they're launching these Bible colleges within the prison with private funding. So taxpayers are not having to pay for this, but yet taxpayers are receiving the benefit of programs like this. And so the key question becomes, is this something that can spread even to more prisons around the country? We don't know the answer to that. We're sitting back right now just trying to keep tabs, because we keep hearing about a new seminary that's popped up in a prison, and we didn't know about it.
Well, and I guess that is the bottom line, isn't it? I mean, if we believe that our criminal justice system actually includes justice, then we want to see life change when these men and women get out, right? And that doesn't always happen.
That's it. And you know, the other thing that's interesting is if you look at this just from kind of an innovations point of view, and the book, by the way, is not a faith-based publisher. This is Routledge, and they've published our book as in their innovation series. And we see this as a very innovative approach, because at Angola, it's not just that they train them with the Bible college. They train them in all kinds of areas. So they have great vocational programs that take place there. And a lot of the guys that lead that are from the Bible college. So what we see happening is not just in prisons, but I see it in other faith-based ministries, is that these ministries are very holistic. They're very innovative, and so you see some of these great new programs that can help drug addicts or can help people that are homeless that are faith-based. So where's the innovation coming from? It's coming from people that are faith-motivated to address a real serious problem that society can't quite fix.
You know, I was just thinking, as you mentioned, that many of these in Angola, at least, have life sentences without parole. So the motivation to change for the better certainly necessarily isn't there. But I would think that would lead to hopelessness in a major way. Talk about maybe how these churches really provide hope and help for some of these inmates.
You've hit the nail on the head. I mean, inside of prisons, I mean, one of the reasons why we have such a huge drug problem in our country, and especially among teenagers, is the issue of despair. Kids find themselves in those kinds of predicaments. They tend to isolate themselves, and then they medicate themselves. And it's a spiral that only goes down. And in that way, they're not different than prisoners, because prisoners who have no hope, no direction, No purpose. I mean, that puts you in a place where you're not only you don't care about hurting yourself or anybody if you find yourself in that kind of a predicament. But we're finding just the opposite. And we've done surveys with these prisoners, and it's very clear that the power of the gospel helps these guys not only to cope with living in a difficult situation, knowing they're not going to get out. And now, what do? They have hope. Many of them have told us, you know, going to prison is the best thing that ever happened to me. I would be dead if it weren't for prison. I was on a collision course, and you know, God sent me to prison. You know, I got my life together, and now I serve God in here. And you know, I want to help other people. And so again, it's not the typical narrative. These guys are actually getting a chance to rewrite their whole life narrative. And it's a very powerful, and that's why we call it identity transformation. They really are able to say, you know, I used to be that, but this is what I am now.
Words like dignity and humanity seems like have to be central if we really believe in the right treatment for prisons and what's going on in criminal justice. Say more about the importance of, you know, just the general population, everyone listening today, whether they know someone in prison or not, that
right.
We need to do more than what we're doing.
Absolutely. And I think it's because of the economic situation the country is in, there is a tendency to kind of cast people aside and not think about second chances. But not every prison is like Angola. Most prisoners do get out. Most prisoners do come home. Angola is the extreme. But, you know, the reality is you don't lock people up typically for forever. They tend to get out, and you know, we want these people coming back to our communities as different people. We don't want them coming back as people that are even more discouraged with more despair and hopelessness than when they went to prison, which oftentimes is the reality. And so that's why I think there are so many lessons to learn from a prison like Angola, that prisoners can find hope, they can find meaning, they can find purpose, and then they can become law-abiding citizens that really do contribute, people that we want in our communities, not people that we want to hide from. And so this is the really compelling story of hope and purpose that I think is a lesson that we really could learn, and I think it's exciting for people of faith to be involved in one of the greatest problems that we have for providing a solution.
In fact, the latest Christianity Today, I just saw on my desk this morning, has the lead story about that with the subheading on the lead story. It says one of the hardest days of incarceration may be the day it ends. And it talks about how the church can play an important role in this transition back into culture and society. You talk in the Angola Prison Seminary study about a couple of key courses, grief counseling and conflict management. And I thought, you know, those are probably ones that you know, we need in life in general, but they're probably especially important here in a situation like this.
You know, we can't tell you how many inmate ministers have told us the level of counseling that they provide, and especially these field ministers now that are being transferred to other prisons, because they have family members that, you know, have issues that they're struggling with in the free world. Or they have a family member that dies and they can't even get out to go to the funeral. So inmates in prison struggle with a lot of grief, and yet these other ministers now, because they've had these counseling courses while in the seminary, are able to minister to others. I had a warden telling me just recently, he said, you know, we have suicide watch. Guys regularly on suicide watch, and now we send the field ministers to intervene in these cases to prevent a suicide. And so this whole issue of conflict resolution, you know, most of us don't have a course in that, but here you have inmates, and this has been one of their problems, is they don't know how to solve conflict. That's why they're in prison in many cases. And so for them to be able to take, you know, something ugly and make something beautiful out of it and help others, It helps them change, and that's how they change. By serving others, they change themselves. And as we know, this is the gospel.
I think as one of the phrases I caught in the book was relationship theology, which I thought was probably something where I mean, we all need to apply that, don't we? But say a bit more about that.
Yeah, they have something called sidewalk counseling. Hmm. And, you know, they walk the sidewalks ministering to people and listening to them. That's one of the things they say that they were trained to do is, hey, listen, just listen. And then some of them walk the tiers, the cell block tiers, just to see if there's someone that wants to chat. And, you know, what happens is, of course, they wind up putting many, many hours into this. I mean, we've had some guys tell us they don't get a day off because there's such a need. And you might think that other inmates wouldn't take them seriously, but they actually do because they see them as authentic. And, you know, inmates can see you through people real quick if you're the real deal or not. And I think that when they see people out there giving their lives away, they know that there's something unique about them.
Got a note from listener Cindy, who has just sent a note and said, I'm listening to your show on Angola. It says, two of my sons spent their spring break for 10 days at Angola last year, 2015, with a program through Wheaton College. They lived, ate, and served within the prison. It was a life-changing experience for sure. There are amazing things happening there through the power of God. And she just says thanks for this program. And I'm thinking, Byron, you've seen it, right?
I've seen it. I've seen these groups come there. And a number of congregations actually send delegations there because they want to know, how can our congregation be involved in something like this? You know, we're in a completely different state. And I think they come to Angola and learn how, okay, you know, maybe we can help. In our neck of the woods, and I think there's many ways in which people can do that. So this takes us way beyond people going into a prison and sharing a Bible study. This is a whole new way of thinking about transformation.
Well, Byron, we only have a minute or so left. Is there anything you'd recommend if people want to find out more, or should they just connect you with you at the center?
Yeah, they can reach out to us. The website here is www.baylorisr.org, baylorisr.org. And then if they were interested in getting the book, and by the way, if you go to that website, you can find my name. And if you find my name, I direct the center. You'll see a bunch of publications that deal with Angola and other related things like faith-based drug treatment. All of those publications are free. You can just download them. And then if you want to get the new book, you can go to Amazon.com, and it's there.
All right. Byron, so good to talk with you again, and I recommend your previous book as well, More God, Less Crime,
thank you so much.
Which really kind of sets up the conversation today. We've been talking about the Angola Prison Seminary and this new years of study showing the effect of faith-based ministry and identity transformation, assistance, and rehabilitation. Byron Johnson, who is the founder and director of the Institute for Studies of Religion. You can find him at baylorisr.org. And, Byron, good to visit with you again. Blessings
Thanks,
on your,
always,
on your
Neil.
Work. You've been
Thanks,
listening to
friend.
Connecting Faith, and I have a song that I thought would just kind of help set the conversation as we take the next step here on Connecting Faith. Stay tuned.
Now, I won't deny the worst you could say about me. But I'm not defined by mistakes that I've made, because God says I'm me. I am not who I was, being remade. I am new. I'm chosen and holy, and I'm dearly loved. I am new. I am new.
I always enjoy talking with Byron Johnson and the great work they're doing at the center. And this area of criminal justice so important as followers of Christ. How do we live out our faith and provide good news and hope to the prisoners? And as Jesus called us to do that very thing. I've been talking about it today. I always love to get some feedback. We've got an important highlight coming up from Craig DeRoche, the president of Prison Fellowship, and we'll get to that in a moment. But we'll talk some takeaways. Carissa, what was your thought?
Yeah, I think it's just great what Angola is doing to just provide the hope for these inmates that is available to us all. And, you know, some people aren't on earth anymore to receive this hope. And so it's just I think that it's God's way of giving these people another chance to recognize their need for him. I just think it's powerful.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Yeah, really. You know what he was talking about there and the need for counseling. I'm married to a counselor and therapist, and trauma is everywhere. Everybody has either, you know, the big trauma or the little T trauma, as they call it. And it's prevalent in the prisons, not surprising to me. And it's just kind of maybe a wake up call for somebody that could go there and is trained to do that, to lend their services to minister and counsel some prisoners.
I loved what he was talking about. You know, they have over 6,000 prisoners and so many of these now 29 churches, inmate led churches. And so many of these people are saying, I'm going to serve life by dying to self.
Yeah.
You know, that's a good lesson for all of us. And, you know, they're going to the Presbyterian Church on Sunday and the Methodist on Tuesday.
Right.
And just, you know, so.
Making the rounds.
So, yeah, it's the way it ought to be. So, well, we want to take a different angle, as we often do here on Connecting Faith, just to look at the topic from a different lens. And Craig DeRoche from Justice Fellowship was on with me not long ago. We were talking about kind of the broken justice system. And one of the challenges is that we're incentivizing maybe the wrong things. Listen to these couple minutes from Craig DeRoche.
Some of the structural things that we've gotten wrong in America is we've incentivized arrest and incarceration and conviction of people. So what we've really done is we've told the folks that work the job, whether they're white or black, racist or not racist, that how they get paid, how they protect their income, how they protect their pension is by arresting and locking up more people. That's the metric that we care about, not justice as a metric. And so what we saw was, you know, a lot of policies that were passed that and a lot of behaviors where people would target the folks that couldn't defend themselves. Because if you're getting paid in the federal and state drawdowns are based on how many people you're arresting and convicting, it wouldn't make sense to go arrest and try to get convictions from people that could afford lawyers. It would be more expedient to arrest people that can't defend themselves. And so just at a human nature level, what I've seen in the numbers, and I speak quite frequently to, is human beings, you know, and their performance out there. They're being told, I need to arrest and convict as many people as possible to justify my existence. So that's what I'm going to do. And you get far more reckless policies that we're seeing the tide turn against, like in New York City, where they were literally stopping and frisking people based on how they looked at, you know, more than 500,000 people a year on the sidewalk with no warrant, no other reason. So again, you're incentivizing the police to target people based on how they looked. And naturally, the police were gravitating toward people that looked like they couldn't put up a fight or defend themselves. And in America, with over 97% of all of the arrests never going to trial, we've created a system where once you're arrested, you're essentially pushed into a situation where it's a negotiated situation and not necessarily justice meted out by your peers through a jury system and sentencing by a judge. And so the system's moved incredibly distant away from what we might think it is or what we see on the primetime television shows. And that has led to a number that, if you look at it from a socioeconomic standpoint, you see that whether it's a Caucasian, Hispanic, or African-American person in the criminal justice system, those that are there are by and large on the lower end of the American socioeconomic scale, and that's who's been targeted. And because of the population of minorities in America that are on the lower end of the socioeconomic scale, they are disproportionately represented in the ranks, which speaks poorly of America on so many ways, including, you know, of course, the race issues. But, you know, it's kind of a horrifying thing that we're doing, is kind of preying on and targeting the least of us.
Craig DeRoche from Justice Fellowship and Prison Fellowship, talking about some of the breakdowns in our system. And I encourage you to do a little search online. You can go to the Connecting Faith show page at myfaithradio.com, and you can search for that conversation with Craig DeRoche and hear the full interview. It was pretty fascinating. If you missed part of today's interview as well, you can hear that. We post those interviews up on our website on the show page after the program, so you can check that out again. The Connecting Faith show page at myfaithradio.com. Well, it's Monday, and every Monday it's the memory verse time, just to give us a verse, something to think on, meditate on, and hopefully apply to memory during the week. James 1, 19 and 20, our verse today on anger and revenge. Everyone should be quick to listen, slow to speak, and slow to become angry, for a man's anger does not bring about the righteous life that God desires. Andy Stanley has a word for us on this important verse.
Do you know what the lie behind anger and revenge is? Basically the same as forgiveness. You know, that I should be angry because, you know, they deserve for me to be angry, and I should get revenge because they deserve it. And some of you, in fact, I'd say, as I do a lot of premarital counseling with people and postmarital counseling a little bit, 90% of the issues I deal with are anger issues. That somebody's mad at somebody who's not really in the current family. They're mad at a previous family, and they've never gotten over it. And their character issues in the marriage always, almost always relate to issues of anger. Marriage problems are easy. Marriage problems are like, he squeezes it on the top and I squeeze the toothpaste on the bottom. You know, that's a marriage problem. But the marriage problems, you know, that's, but the real problems that wreak havoc with marriage are almost always anger issues. Some of you this morning, your wife or husband think you have problems in your character, and it stems back to you're just mad and you don't know what to do with your anger. And you think whoever you're angry at, they deserve it anyway. You know something? You got to quit going down that road. And one of the primary ways is to be set free through God's truth. Look at this verse. Everyone, and boy, there's some men in here this morning. This verse should just be on the tip of our tongue at all times. Everyone should be quick to listen, slow to speak, slow to become angry. Then here's the truth that'll set you free. For man's anger does not bring about the righteous life God desires. Men, if I can pick on you a minute, your anger works against God's will in your life and family. Whenever you let it go with your anger, you're working against God. You've said, God, I'll teach you. I'm going to work against you. It may not be a conscious decision, but that's the truth. The truth is that our anger never accomplishes God's will for our life or for anybody else. That's pretty powerful. You say, but you don't understand what they did. I understand. You may have been wrong. They may be completely wrong, but you just need to know the truth. Your anger will not accomplish or further God's will for your life. That's pretty powerful truth. You know, something needs to be right there. Because your wife's going on and on and on, or your boss is going on and on and on, or somebody's going on and on and on, it needs to be right here. I need to be slow to speak. I need to be quick to listen. I need to be slow to speak. I need to be quick to listen and slow to speak. That's where I need to live during this encounter with whoever it is. That's the truth.
Memory verse Monday today from James 1, 19 and 20. Everyone should be quick to listen, slow to speak, and slow to become angry. For a man's anger does not bring about the righteous life that God desires. It's a good word for us today. Good conversation with Byron Johnson today, Ted.
Absolutely. I loved it. You did a great job, and he is doing an incredible work there.
Yeah, that's something.
It's wonderful.
Well, tomorrow we're going to talk about should we abandon the phrase non-Christian?
And say what instead?
Well, Luke Cawley says it's time to retire the term and find a new way to offer contextual apologetics to reach the convinced atheists and the spiritual but not religious. You know, a lot of people that call themselves in those categories.
Yep.
But, you know, he's written the book, The Myth of the Non-Christian. Looking forward to helping us learn how to use appropriate and effective means to share the gospel. Be a great conversation with Luke Cawley tomorrow. From across the pond in Great Britain. So we're looking forward to that. By the way, we're just a couple weeks away from our fall fundraiser. Hope that you will pray about being a part of it. And you can find out more about the ministry and join the support team at myfaithradio.com.